available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Repping it on my hat today, and together we make the Podcast of Champions. Talking all things Pac-12 football, 8 ranked teams. 3 battles of ranked teams this weekend. We got a recap. It was a weird kind of week 3, and we're going to preview and do our picks against the spread. Week 4, we can pat ourselves on the back for some really good picks. David and I were both 4-2 against the spread last week. 17-10 overall. We're pretty good. We got the out-of-conference ones down. Now we get to get into the meat.
Yeah, but now here's where it gets shitty usually with our picks. Like, you know, I don't think we're going to be maintaining a nearly 2-1 wins-losses ratio.
I don't know, man. We'll see.
I think if we can maintain a +7 to +10 wins over losses, I think that'll be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, that would be kind of nice. We'll see. We'll see what we can do there. If you have questions or comments, we're going to have a long show because we, for some reason, I don't know why, we weren't able to do a recap show. So we're going to have to do it all at once.
I know why.
Wait, what? Why was that?
Ryan had to go on his... Was this the 17th or 18th vacation of the year?
I don't know. It's up there somewhere. It's not a vacation. It's like 2 days.
Oh, yeah. God. 2 days in the middle of the beginning of the work week, in the middle of football season, the busiest time of the year for our business.
USC had a bye week.
Uh-huh.
I went to Catalina camping and fishing a little bit. It was fun.
Yeah. I'm glad it was fun.
Yeah.
I have friends who are listeners who ask me, does Ryan actually have a job? Does he actually work?
I do. I work. Come on. Okay. So, yeah, we got a lot to get to today. We'll do a quick recap. We'll preview the games. We got to go over our picks. The survival pool had massive damage. There's a less surviving than you would want in a pool of such.
Yeah, there was a hit below the waterline for our listenership.
Yes.
I warned you. I warned you.
Didn't we switch? Did we?
I didn't have Stanford originally. I think you've switched from Stanford, maybe. Maybe. I had somebody else. I think it was Arizona originally. Then I went to Cal.
Yeah.
But I warned you about Stanford.
Yeah.
Sac State's legit. They beat them.
It's pretty legit. Okay. If you have questions or comments for the show, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is our email, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got to hear from the Zodiac Killer, but I think we got a voicemail from Perk in there. A lot of emails we got to get to, too. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast and the website, Pac-12podcast.com. The Apple podcasting app is still there. We're still looking for reviews, still begging you guys for them. I don't even know why, but I think they're pretty cool.
They're fun. We have a new one.
Oh, cool. Okay.
This is from DRB in the Valley, a 5-star review. Parallel Universes. I've been listening to this podcast for about 5 years and have no excuse for taking so long to review this fun podcast. I'm a big USC and USCFootball.com fan, so love what Ryan does, and have come to overlook the lefty historical bias and anti-corporate takes from Dave. He won me over with his mascot sound imitations of non-Pac-12 teams in the recap/previews. And Dave's frequent cynical takes are often sadly right. Yes, modern college football was the love child of ESPN and Fox. This year, I've noticed a distinct parallel universe between the fates of the Pac-12 and the fates of the Podcast of Champions, both with unexpected peaks right before the fall into oblivion. Great job, guys, and actually hoping for a reincarnated Podcast of Champions in Big Ten country. Sent you a separate note about that. Great chemistry between our hosts and a fun listen. What a very nice review.
That was very nice. Like, you know, he likes USC.
The mascot noises are always the gateway drug into leftist politics. I hope you know that, DRB. You're coming over.
He doesn't like your politics, but he finds...
You're coming over. I know you are.
He finds what he likes about you and talks about that. That was very nice.
Yes.
And that's not easy to do, find stuff you like about you.
No, it is not.
All right, quick kind of newsy stuff. Did you see Ross Dellinger had a piece on the Pac-2?
I did.
In the Mountain West, they could have like a relegation thing.
Yeah, baby.
It actually made a lot of sense.
Clearly big listeners of the podcast Champions.
So we'd have to, you need two 8-team leagues. So they would add a couple to what they have with Oregon State, Washington State. And then you would have like the 8 in the, whatever the top one was, and the 8 in the bottom. And I think one thing that was maybe glanced over in the story, like, because you do have to get a media rights deal, and you're going to make more if you're in the A league than the B league, which that's tough for athletic departments, but you might get more. And the fact that the schedule could change all year, like, oh, we're going to have 6 versus 7 play, and the loser gets relegated, and the number 8 team's already relegated. Right. But I think the ratings for those games, like the crappy games between like the top teams in the B league, would get a higher rating. And I feel like you could make even more money by doing this. By like, do you care at the end of the season if Cal is playing Arizona State and it doesn't really matter? Well, it could matter. ESPN, Fox, whoever would want to pick that up, because it means relegation or promotion. And I feel like that could be, it's going to be hard, but man, it made a lot of sense to me reading that piece.
Very cool. And also, I think it sets it up as a proof of concept. You know, they sometimes like test rules in lesser leagues before they bring them up to the majors. Yeah. Like, look, we've both talked about how we don't necessarily think the state of college football is in any way stable. Like, whatever this new alignment is, it's not going to be the final alignment. It would be very cool if the Mountain West, or whatever it is, whatever they end up calling it, creates this kind of proof of concept for a relegation system. Because, look, would it be preferred for me relegation over the old conference system with regional conferences that make sense? No. But in a professionalized environment where things are suddenly, you know, got this veneer of, you know, trying to be a pro league but still not quite a pro league, relegation would make things fun again in a system that I think is going to increasingly be unfun when there's these two super leagues. So if you can create a proof of concept with this Mountain West, then maybe that next alignment can include something like this.
Yeah, I think like the pitch count or whatever, the for like Major League Baseball, wasn't they trying that in the minor leagues? There's been things like that have been happening. Yeah, because if it does end up being one big super league and you get a commissioner and there's 30 teams in the main league and 30 teams in the bottom league, and there's, you know, that could be really fun where the playoff isn't the only thing that matters. It's getting up to the top. And there's questions about Olympic sports and how that all works, but man, this would be something that would be interesting, because there's still value, like we talked about a million times, there's value in the Pac-12 entity. There's, you know, I think in the article I estimated like $40 million in reserves, whatever the Pac-12 network's worth and that infrastructure, the NCAA units, and then potentially keeping a link to the college football playoff and that payout, and you know, the automatic qualifier status, all that kind of stuff. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But hopefully we see that happen.
Agreed.
Did you know what the most watched game over the weekend was?
Colorado State, Colorado.
Crazy. 9.3 million people watched that thing.
Yeah.
It was a good game. It was a close game. But
so
yeah.
Like several points here. There was so much conflation over the last 5 years, especially with the decline of the Pac-12 and then these like inherent beliefs and truths about time slots and all this kind of stuff that I think quickly falls on its face when you see, okay, Colorado's exciting and they're pretty good, and suddenly that results in this huge rating. If, you know, again, not to blame so much on USC, UCLA, Washington, all these other schools, but if these schools had been good and playing at 7:30, people would have been watching like the 7:30 ESPN game when it's a top 5 USC versus, you know, scuffling USC under Clay Helton. I think so much of this like narrative about the Pac-12 was simply an indictment of athletic directors making terrible decisions to hire and then not fire bad coaches. And, you know, when you see immediately, it wasn't even supposed to be a good game. Like, Colorado was favored by 3 touchdowns. And yes, it ended up being this back and forth affair, but there was a baked in audience because Colorado's good and they're fun and exciting, and the head coach understands media and understands the importance of media hype and getting people amped up for a game and getting people excited about it. And yeah, there's some people who really don't like the kind of carny energy that he brings, but it plays. And some of that is, again, him being one of the most famous athletes to ever play a sport. But the other part of it is he himself brings that hype. He brings that energy. And I think more coaches could learn something from that. It is part of the job to be a showman, to be the front man of your program, and not to have poop running down your leg from a overfilled diaper. like Lincoln Riley.
Nice. Did you want to talk
was
about
that? Was that a good segue?
You can talk about that.
Did you like that segue?
Yeah, yeah.
Lincoln Riley this week, he banned a reporter from practice for 2 weeks because that reporter, I will try to describe this as fairly as possible.
Yeah.
While not just repeating the company line, violated several very stupid rules from USC, and then ultimately wrote a absolute innocuous puff piece notebook that included an anecdote that he observed. So just to let everyone know how media works at these practices, you're allowed in for X number of minutes. It's not very long. And then there's a media availability period where you talk to the players. They'll come up and then you'll talk to them. There's this period of time where they're coming up or they're waiting to the side before everything starts rolling. But they're in front of the media. They're in front of the assembled gaggle of media. They're in front of a bunch of people who write for a living about that team. Whatever they say is fair game. Now, apparently at USC, there's a rule against that. Arcane, stupid, Byzantine. This guy wrote a puff piece where he said Quentin Joyner was asking before the media scrum, hey, did they tell you what to say? Basically just trying to indicate
he's a freshman.
Just trying to indicate he's a freshman who's nervous speaking. It was what you are taught how to write is something to humanize the subject, something to provide an anecdotal lead, not to just go into his dad says he's really shy, but instead, here's an example. Here's what I talked to about. It's for what it is. It's a well-crafted, you know, seamless notebook. It got him banned from practice for 2 weeks because Lincoln Riley is a big baby with a lot of stupid rules.
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of the rules were there too before the. So I was in Catalina and I get back to this and I'm like, this seems a little crazy. Yeah, I mean, he's been, I would say in general, he's been pretty good, a lot better than what I've heard from people at Oklahoma when it was there. This one I don't quite get, knowing that the reporter in question had broken a lot of the dumb rules that David, you know, doesn't like. There's some of the stuff that you're not supposed to do.
So there's some stuff.
When we're following it and then you see someone do it, you're like, why the heck is that guy doing that? That's happened a few times. And then you're like, okay, so I think this was sort of like a final, hey, we've told you not to do this or blah, blah, blah. That's my guess.
Granted. And this is another thing where I'm getting more into like, because I think a lot of the angle the general media people are taking is, oh, he just violated some rules. You know, he should get a slap on the wrist or whatever. No, the rules themselves are stupid. There was one that they cited that he tweeted out guys on bikes at practice, right? That they were the injured doing their like,
right. We're not supposed to talk about guys that are injured or whatever, unless head coach addresses
How long are they giving you in practice now?
We get like 20 minutes to watch the beginning.
Okay, so you get 20 minutes of watching that guys stretch and then
some individual do like, nothing. Drills. They'll do some individual drills.
Here's my point.
Yeah.
If you're going to be that, which is what UCLA is, right? We only get 15 minutes and it's basically nothing but individual drills. Just close it. If you're going to then have increasingly draconian rules on top of you only get 15 to 20 minutes of stretching, just close the practice. But if you are a reporter, your job is to report. Your job is to, you know, say these things. It's not to be the stenographer for the program. And so either allow them in and let them report whatever's in there or don't allow them in. But you got to pick one or the other. You can't just like have these increasingly arbitrary rules that probably change from season to season because that's the way it always works with these guys who are kind of these Martinet dilettantes where they just are like, oh, no, but that thing pissed me off that year, so I'm going to change it. And also, like, whenever a coach starts doing this, where they're overly focused on media stuff, it's generally not a good sign. It's generally a sign
that
these
true,
guys are way off the mark in what they're focusing on. It's happened a ton of times at UCLA where suddenly Carl Durrell, Rick Neuheisel, Jim Mora get super invested in what you're reporting and all this kind of stuff. They start increasing the rules, changing the dynamics for media access. And it's because they're going crazy. They're going insane. They're paranoid. They're feeling too much pressure.
Yeah.
It's not good. So generally, it's stupid. In this specific instance, he's being a big baby who needs his diaper changed.
At UCLA, if there's like injured players and you see them, are you allowed to report that or no?
Yeah. Anything we see in the, again, like 12 to 15 minutes we have access to, we can report anything. If it's a coach yelling at the players, we can report it. If it's players getting injured literally in the time we're viewing, we can report it. Okay. If it's guys we see walking around who don't have their pads on, we can report it. We can only be in there for 12 to 15 minutes, which I think is its own set of stupid things. I truly think all these teams should have full access, because if you gave us full access, you could create some rules. You could create some rules like don't tweet about formations. Don't tweet about specific plays.
Like yeah,
don't
yeah.
tweet about new injuries that you see, that sort of stuff. But the rest of this thing where you deny so much access to like 15 or 20 minutes, and then you create this entirely new set of rules on top of that, it's stupid. It's self-defeating. The only reason it's working for Lincoln Riley right now is because they're winning. As soon as they stop winning, if that happens, everyone's going to hate it. But you out there, you're sycophantically defending it, you can go ahead and do that. But it's only because he's winning that you want to do that.
Yeah, I think for us, I mean, we want to be able to create content, you know? So just like, all right, don't really like this rule, but I can still shoot photos and video in the beginning of practice. So I'd rather watch it than not watch it and not, say, well, we're not, unless we can report on it, we're not going to see it. So it's sort of like, you're just trying to get as much content out of it as you can, because that's what our jobs are.
Yeah. And it's just, it's continuing nobody wants to hear this. It's a bunch of whining, media yeah. whining, but it just makes, it makes a job harder that in theory is entirely designed to improve your understanding of the game.
All right. Let's move on. Survivor pool. A lot of fun this past week. So David and I both picked, what did we pick? California?
We both picked Sturdy Golden Bear.
Yeah. They're the most people. So we had 277 people went into week three. Only 113 of them survived. Pretty crazy. He wants us to mention, so thanks again to Matthew for composing all this stuff. Can you mention for people not to submit picks if you're not in the pool or you never entered? So don't enter the pool if you weren't in the last few weeks. If you haven't picked correctly 3 weeks in a row, don't enter again. It makes it harder for him to compile everything. But
yeah,
people that won of the 113, most people had Cal. Slightly behind that, Arizona. We had some Colorado, some Washington State, a few UCLAs, a few Oregon States. We had a couple Utahs and an Oregon. Someone took Oregon against a really patsy team. Okay. But at least they survived, because the losers, 142 of them, 138 took Stanford and 4 took Arizona State.
Yeah. Never get too clever. Get clever, but never too clever.
That's a lot of clever. And 22 people did not pick. So, yeah. I don't know. Would you rather be a non-pick or Stanford? What would you?
I would rather be a non-pick. I would rather have forgotten than tried to believe in Stanford.
Yeah. Matthew.
Never believe in Stanford. That's
Matthew,
a first mistake.
Pick Stanford. He's a Stanford fan. He says, before going into details, I just want to say, and he gives the F word all spelled out for you. Yeah. So thank you, Matthew, for composing all that. Please enter your picks for week 4. And David and I are both going with Arizona.
Indeed.
This week.
Indeed. All right, we should do some game recaps, right?
We should do some game recaps. So this is David's power rankings once again. Moves around a little bit. I'll jump in, but I've just been kind of going with it. Now you didn't write this in the doc, but I remember if your tweet was correct, you said number 75.
Yes.
Stanford Cardinal.
There's only 12.
I believe
teams.
They were 72.
72, sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't want to go too harsh yet. And this is actually a battle between number 15, Arizona State, and number 72, Stanford, because one lost to an FCS. The other one got shut out at home. That was really hard for me to do. I actually kind of think Arizona State's worse, but Stanford, you can't lose to a lower division school. You just can't. Which was what Stanford did. They lost to Sac State. Yeah, it was a neck and neck game. Wasn't lucky. Wasn't lucky by any means. Sac State just beat that ass. Stanford's quarterback situation is a nightmare. They can run the ball okay, but their quarterback situation is not good. Defense isn't great. Sac State's pretty good. They won 30-23. It was neck and neck the whole way. It was 17-14 Sac State at half. It wasn't like some grand comeback. It wasn't like they jumped out to a huge lead and then just held on. They just were the fundamentally better team for 4 friggin' quarters. And what a perfect encapsulation of what Troy Taylor has to do there now. because you see the program he built, just beat his own ass at Stanford. He has such a mountain to climb there, and it's going to be a painstaking process with their transfer portal rules. You know, you can see glimpses. You can see glimpses against Hawaii. You can see glimpses. But, man, it's going to take a lot of work to get them back to respectability.
There wasn't even a line on this game, and Sac State won.
Yeah, there was eventually a line. ESPN had it like the morning of the game at Stanford minus six or something like that, minus six and a half.
So we would have taken Sacramento State plus.
No doubt. Yeah. Oh, God, no. That would have been,
you had them to win.
Yeah, if that had been money line, it would have been Sac State's. Yeah, for sure. Tons of value there.
Justin Lampson, you know, he was like a quarterback at Syracuse, a pretty crappy team, and couldn't see the field. And he's starting for Stanford. That's not good. 7 of 17, 138 yards and a pick. Ben Jurosik, one of the top players on the team, didn't have a catch for the first time in his career. And Sac State wins on a last-minute touchdown. Not a good look for Stanford. Now look at, you know, the Pac-12 at least is doing good everywhere else. But we weren't sure if there was going to be like a top half or a bottom half, but
There's a bottom two.
There's a bottom rung. It's like the Pac-2 for like Oregon, you know, the only two teams left. There's only two teams that are garbage.
Stanford
right now
has come by, honestly. I will say for ASU, which we'll get to next, the injury situation is ridiculous. I do think there's some other systemic issues that Kenny Dillingham hopefully started to correct this week. But we'll get to them right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Number 15 in our 12-team pool.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Big jump up from Stanford, from 72 to 15.
ASU lost 29-0 to Fresno State.
On the road?
Wasn't that close, I'll say.
No. Was it on the road?
No.
They didn't go to Fresno for
this? This was in Tempe.
Oh, that's worse.
How many quarterbacks – okay, first, how many quarterbacks played in this game?
I'm going to give you the over-under at 3.5.
I'll take the under. Was one of them Jaden Rashada?
No.
Jaden Rashada had a pregame injury sometime during the week. Speaking of stupid rules, ASU has full access to practice, but they can't report any injuries. Not even if a guy comes into the week, like from the game, newly injured on the Monday, they can't report it. And so we didn't hear this until Saturday. Anyway, Jaden Rashada was unavailable for the game. And we got treated to Trenton Bourget and Drew Pine, both going down with new injuries in the game while also playing terribly. They each threw a pick. Drew Pine threw two. And then we saw fourth string quarterback Jacob Conover come in, and he also threw two picks. Arguably the worst showing from quarterbacks in ever. But in addition to the two picks that Drew Pine threw, he also fumbled twice and lost them both.
Oh,
there were 8 total turnovers for ASU in this game.
That's a lot of turnovers.
They turned it over 8 times. Their quarterback situation was 37 attempts for 188 yards, and their running game was 27 carries for 42 yards. Arguably the most inept offensive performance I've ever seen.
And we watched Colorado all of last year.
This team, as it's presently constituted, would struggle to beat 2022 Colorado. But yeah, I mean, Arizona State in a lot of trouble. So this week, what I was alluding to, and we'll get to this maybe more in the preview for USC, but that's going to be a bloodbath. Kenny Dillingham took over play calling duties from offensive coordinator Bo Baldwin, who I think I mentioned on the show. Completely stupid that Dillingham hired an offensive coordinator to run an offense and call plays. Like, what does he think he was hired to do? Did they like his management skills as a 32-year-old? No. They liked the offense that he ran at 3 previous stops, including most famously at Oregon, where he turned Bo Nix, who has suddenly reverted back to looking like Auburn Bo Nix, into a guy who was hyped as a Heisman contender this year. He did that with his offense and his play calling. And then he decided to give that up in favor of Cal's, one of Cal's worst offensive coordinators? What are we doing? It was just by virtue of Fresno State not being able to finish drives that this was not 45-0.
Yeah. 5 picks, 3 fumbles lost. I mean, insane. 104 yards of offense and 4 turnovers in the first half was pretty crazy, playing 3 quarterbacks, like you mentioned. This was the first Arizona State home shutout since 1988. It was 50-0 to USC. Their last regular shutout, I think, was another USC one, but that was in the Coliseum. But not good to be home shutout by a Group of Five team. Not even a
power. That's not
five.
Good?
That's not
That's
good.
That's bad?
Yeah.
You don't, you don't think that works out for you?
So I think number 15 is fair.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're going to be fighting for the last spot.
I guess they're getting some guys healthy. A lot of offensive linemen were hurt. I mean, they're getting some guys back. Drew Pine practiced this week.
Well, and here's the game for this year. You ready for this?
Yeah.
There's no ASU-Stanford matchup. Will either of these teams get a second win this year?
Ooh.
That's the big question.
So we're not, no one's in danger of going 0-for. Like, those are fun years. We're not having that.
But we could have a 1-for. We could have a 1-11.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to our number 10 team.
California Golden Bears.
Okay, so you look at the final score for this one, 31-17 over Idaho, and you're like, oh, ho-hum. Idaho's a pretty good FCS. That's okay. Surely.
Oh, by the way, Rook, we both had Fresno -3 and won that one. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Surely Cal controlled this game from the jump, right? Surely. Surely it wasn't, 17-0 Idaho at one point. Yeah, boy howdy. Cal was making this look stupid for a really long time. They really can't throw the ball. They've got some major issues there. Luckily, they can run it. Even without Jaden Ott in this game, Isaiah Ifeanyi was great. 22 carries for 137 yards, and they needed every bit of it. Defensively, it was okay. After a while, they didn't allow Idaho to be too efficient, especially after halftime. But man, oh man, this was dangerous for a long time. And Cal is a little bit lucky to walk away with a seemingly comfortable win.
Yeah, 17-0. Then they go 31 unanswered. That's good, at least. Didn't give up any more points.
Sure.
They've won the turnover margin every game this year. So will that continue? But there are +3 turnovers in this one. That certainly helped with the 31.
Oh, somebody has the question. When did Idaho move down? They're not FBS anymore. They do this all the time. Idaho's always bouncing between FCS and FBS. It's impossible to know when it's going to happen. Right now, they're FCS. But it's like, they're like, what is it? Like an electron where they can be in two different points. Oh, it's like a ray of light can be both a, I don't know. I don't know my physics. You know the thing? It can be both a particle and a beam. I don't know.
I forget.
You know.
Sorry, I was just pulling up the. I forgot that I put up the comments.
It would have been really. It would have been really good if I had that. You know.
Yeah.
But I didn't.
Yeah. OC bodybuilders want to know when did Idaho move down.
That's what I was answering.
Yeah.
Jeez.
No, I'm just saying. Once you put that, I forgot to put the.
You're firing on all cylinders, is what I'm hearing.
Hey man, right I just there. Got. I was like sleeping in a tent the last couple nights. Yeah. Boom, and I'm back. Back
wave and a particle. Thank you.
A wave and a particle.
God, I sounded so stupid there for a little bit.
You did.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Okay, Ott didn't play in this game. So this first time he didn't play in his career. So, a few little notes there for with Cal.
Yeah, I should have just gone with Schrodinger's cat. That would have been the way to go West Texas Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Idaho's both alive and dead at all times.
Scott Meredith, wave particle duality.
Yeah, it's the wave particle duality.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully there was another other good comments that I missed. I'll go back and look when Dave's rambling on about something else. Let's see.
Damn.
Anything else on Cal?
No, I don't want to talk about that anymore.
No line on that one. Next up, we have our number 9 team.
Arizona Wildcats.
Arizona's just the exact same team they were last year. It's kind of comforting. Like, everyone else got different. Arizona stayed the exact same.
You got a good Delora.
You get a good Delora, bad Delora. Just kind of depends. It doesn't really matter who the opponent is. It's just kind of how he's feeling that day. Apparently, he's still under investigation for the sexual assault. Or at least not under investigation, but the settlement has been reopened.
Yeah, I guess some judge said it was not. Just threw it out. So there's more. I tried to read the article and it just didn't tell you what was going on in the beginning. It just gave all these details. I'm like, I don't know what it's like. I got more from the tweet than I did the article. Like,
sounds bad. He sounds like a not great dude, or at least he didn't do some very good things. And so we wish ill for him. But in this game, he was pretty good. UTEP, not very good. Yeah, I mean, Arizona eventually kind of pulled away, but it was sort of lackluster, sort of ho-hum. Their defense, I would say this, Arizona's defense looks slightly better.
OC Bodybuilder said AZ defense is better this year.
Yeah.
It's a little better.
That's about all I'd say at this point. I would say the offense is roughly the same and the defense is slightly better.
Yeah.
Basically the same team.
I like it. This was an 18-point spread. We took Arizona, got it. They covered. I don't know if you saw T-Mac. He had that ridiculous one-handed grab. That was cool.
Yeah, he's a really good player.
Delora, no picks. You know, after turning the ball over 50 times last week, three of the TD drives went 70 plus yards. So I thought that was impressive what Arizona did. But they're capable of putting up, you know, a good showing. And I think with a, you know, a little bit better defense, you might be able to knock off some of those teams in the Pac-12. But you need a good Delora. You need a good offensive side of the ball for Arizona. And that's probably going to be an every other week thing. This isn't good for us that we're picking Arizona in the survival pool like next week, because Arizona had their good.
They could absolutely be Stanford's only conference win this year. It could absolutely happen.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah. So yeah. So Sun Devils. Sun Devils. For the Wildcats, like, I still think you feel a lot better about them than the Sun Devils. I mean, there's still upside. Like, we have them in number 9, but they definitely could beat some teams. But
yep.
You're gonna have to play, you know, play a little bit better.
Yep.
All right. Weird one. Number 8.
Colorado Buffaloes.
This is one where I don't know if this is right for Colorado, but it certainly looked right based on their play on Saturday. And
yeah.
The likelihood of Travis Hunter being out for several weeks. Yeah. Colorado eventually won. So let's lead with that. They won in double overtime over Colorado State, 43-35. Huge part of that was Jay Norvell turtling for Colorado State, going prevent, just being super soft at the end of the game. Colorado State was the better team for 3.5 quarters, about that. More physical, better able to efficiently move the offense. Defensively, they had some beastly plays. They were getting after Shador, and really... And this is maybe the most shocking thing for Colorado. I mean, not shocking because we all watched last year, but still, line play. Colorado State dominated both lines for most of this game. And it was only when Norvell inexplicably kind of called off the dogs late in this game because he's from the Carl Durrell school that Colorado was able to come back in this one. But Colorado State came out just hair on fire. There was the huge hit from Henry Blackburn on Travis Hunter, which was clearly like one of those statement hits. Like, we're doing this. I don't think he intended to whatever he ended up doing to him. I think somebody reported it was a lacerated liver, but he was intending to hit him, like hit him hard too, because it was like one of those, we're going to set the tone, like a tone setting hit. But there was a lot of that, and they got a bunch of penalties because of it. But I think it kind of rattled Colorado. They looked shook for much of this game, and their offensive line really struggled to block, really, really struggled to pass block and run block. For basically the third straight game, Colorado really couldn't run the ball traditionally. Now, all of that kind of was pretext, and also Colorado State has some like NFL guys, like two of their receiver and their tight end are both like, wow, okay. But Colorado, once they came out of halftime and they gotten a little bit more of a rhythm with, again, Norvell calling off the dogs. Sanders can really throw. And when he had just a little bit of time, he could suddenly start making some throws downfield. His receivers stopped dropping every single ball that hit them in the hands, which was important. So if you have a receiver, their job is to catch the ball with their two hands, you know? You know this?
I was told this.
Right.
I read it in a book.
What they were doing instead was the ball would hit them like literally right here and they would go, no, I don't want it. And they did that for a long time in this game. And it was probably a frustrating experience because it's like, well, do they not understand that they're supposed to grab it, not hit it back? It's not volleyball.
Yeah.
Eventually they did start grabbing it instead. And that was a big key for Colorado, but they were lucky to win this. This was a game where it looked like Colorado State had it firmly in control. I know it was only 21-14, but it looked like they were going to dominate the second half, and then Jay Norvell helped Colorado back into it.
Yeah, we both got this one wrong. We took Colorado minus 23.5. Didn't help when Travis Hunter had to go to the hospital there. But it was late in the game, and Colorado was down 11. You know, like, this wasn't like, this was like, certainly could have lost this one. And like you said, I thought Norvell didn't do himself any favors down the stretch, but they got a field goal and that touchdown with a 2-point conversion.
It was
Final minute, like, that was, it was crazy. Like, that needed to happen. Otherwise, Colorado's not winning this game. And, you know, we were looking for like this huge cover, and like, they barely won. And so, are they going to look that bad against Oregon this weekend? I don't know. We'll see. But that was not encouraging if you're thinking, you know, the Colorado is going to make this huge run in the Pac-12.
One thing everyone missed with Colorado State, or not everyone, but at least our dumbasses, is that they changed quarterbacks against Washington State. And this was the quarterback they changed to. And he's also the one who scored those last three touchdowns against Washington State.
Okay.
In like that fourth quarter. So we thought junk time doesn't really matter. He's a player.
He's good.
Like, their quarterback is a player. So I think Colorado State's going to finish the year a lot better than they looked in the first game against Washington State.
All right. Let's go to our number 7 team.
Utah Utes.
Ba-dum. Yeah, this is all kind of stupid and insane. It's really just a function of the number of injuries that Utah has. They just haven't looked great. And it's – so on one hand – it's amazing that they are where they are. They've won two games against Power 5 opponents, including going on the road against Baylor. But on the other hand, they don't look dominant. I mean, against Weber State, it was 17-7 at the half. They finished 31-7. But this was not a, you know, they cruised to a 28-0 and then held on, you know, just playing backups. They had to fight for this one a little bit. Nate Johnson got the start at quarterback. So, again, we didn't see Cam Rising. And he was okay. He runs the ball really, really well. I would say throwing it is still kind of an adventure. I think Kyle Whittingham said they've got about 50% of the offense installed for him. It's not the full gamut because there's just, you know, how much do you give him? But he was okay. They ran the ball really, really well. And I think that was maybe the big takeaway. Weber State's no slouch. They're a pretty good FCS. And defensively, I would say Utah is, considering the number of guys they're down and have been down at different points this year, it's astounding what they've been able to accomplish. I mean, Cole Bishop's he's just phenomenal, and he's everywhere. He's leading the team at safety and tackles for loss. Stunning player. You have to mark him every time he's on the field, and he's on the field all the time. And then their defensive line, without Junior Tafuna, without Connor O'Toole, has been really, really solid. Really, really solid. Now, I think the competition steps up this week. They have to play an offense that has a pulse, unlike whatever you saw from Florida, Baylor, and Weber State. But I think that linebacker play translates, especially now they got Reed back. And they've got a good safety tandem. And they've got really good defensive line play. So I think that's going to be a fun battle. But Utah won 31-7. I think if you were a Utah fan saying, we're going to be down 16 contributors at various points in this first three game stretch, and you said you're going to be 3-0, might not look pretty, but you're going to be 3-0, you'd take in a heartbeat.
Yeah. We had Pac-12 Pilgrim said Weber State had 128 yards. That's not a whole lot there. Did you know the coach of Weber State is named Mickey Mental?
Mickey Mental?
That's his name. How cool is that?
That's awesome.
No line in this game, so we didn't pick, but like you said, no Brent Keefe, no Cam Rising. I don't know when these guys are coming back. We just never hear anything. I mean, we don't know anything about what's going on in Utah. Just like, are they going to trot out a bunch of backups against UCLA?
My read on it, and we'll get to this maybe a little bit more in the preview. My read on it is Tafuna will be back. I think he was sitting as a precautionary measure, and it's okay. FCS. Who cares? I think Connor O'Toole is either back this week or the next week. He's their big defensive end who was supposed to have a breakout year this year. I think he's going to be back. Maybe not 100%, maybe not playing a ton, but back. The one is Rising. I kind of think you either bring him back this week and he's a full 100% and you go with it, or you sit him another 2 weeks and go past Oregon State before you bring him back.
Yeah. We'll see. Did you know that Utah got a pick six?
Mm-hmm.
They've had a pick six.
And that was to close the game out. It was 24-7, I think.
Yeah. And 20 straight seasons. That's the longest streak in FBS.
Yeah.
Utah. Not bad for the Utes. Okay. Next up, we've got
Washington State Cougars.
This one also feels wrong. Like, and this is where we get into, like, again, the top eight in this league. It's just impossible to rank them because Washington State, what have they done that's been unimpressive this year?
Everything's been impressive to me.
They blew out Northern Colorado the way they're supposed to. Now, Northern Colorado is a terrible FCS. Like, that's a really bad FCS team, but they won 64-21, and nobody's complaining about that. I think the ending closing line was Washington State by 48, so technically they didn't cover, but come on.
That's a huge number.
Yeah. Cam Ward was, once again, he looked really good. I mean, how much can you take away from Northern Colorado? But now this is three straight games where he's stacking pretty good performances. So, you know, you start to believe in that a little bit. I don't know. I think their offense is, if not like for real is whatever, a top 25, it's for real is like top 30, top 40. And I think that will translate to definitely a bowl team and maybe quite a bit more.
Yeah, the offense looks much better. You switch to the offensive coordinators. That seemed to help a lot. I mean, I guess you had Cam Ward's college coach. That didn't seem to work out very well, at least at the FBS level. But it's working out now. They were 8 of 10 on third downs, which is pretty impressive, converting 80%. The fourth time in the Pac-12 era that Washington State's gained over 700 yards. Obviously, a bunch of those Leach teams did that, and they did go 43 straight points to start the game, so 43-0. Just getting out on a roll pretty quickly. So, yeah, I think really impressive from Washington State. Obviously, going to get a real test this week, but, you know, they had a ranked team at home, beat them, take a terrible FCS team, beat them, and, you know, now you're just going to go through and see how you do in conference play. And I think they're going to be a dog in week one at home, but still, that's, I mean, this is...
Speaking of dogs...
This is what you've asked.
I got to shout something out.
Yeah.
Peter Sermon's other Nepo baby, Jacob Sermon, he's onto his third team, and he was the starter for Northern Colorado in this game.
Oh, okay.
If you remember, he was one of the Jakes who was attempting to be a successor Jake to Jake Browning.
Yes.
At Washington. Didn't end up getting the job there because, again, Nepo baby. But he ended up at the FCS level.
Did he go to UCLA, too, or where did he go?
No, Colson Yankoff ended up at UCLA, as did Ethan Garbers from that Washington team, but mostly because neither of them were named Jake.
Right.
Jacob
you
Sermon.
You have to be Jake.
You have to be a Jake. Dylan Morris, as we learned, is a Jake. He's Dylan Jacob Morris. And Jacob Sermon is now within Northern Colorado.
Oh, very cool. All right. All these teams are ranked, by the way, so we're going through all these teams. Next up, we got number 5.
UCLA Bruins.
Again, UCLA is pretty impossible to rank because who have they played? Coastal Carolina, who might be decent. San Diego State, who might be bad. And North Carolina Central, who's an FCS from the HBCU level. Dante Moore started, as everyone expected. Five quarterbacks played in this game.
Five?
Yeah, Dante Moore started and played every meaningful snap, but every meaningful snap ended at about 3 minutes to go in the first quarter. It was 35-0 at that point. And frankly, he didn't even play all those snaps. Colin Schley came in after the third touchdown, I think, and then literally immediately on the first play, took a zone read keeper for a touchdown. UCLA, I think, had three different one-play touchdown drives in this game. NC Central was just really overmatched. UCLA won 59-7. We don't really know a whole lot. UCLA's defense looks pretty good. UCLA's offense looks pretty good. Let's see them this week against Utah and test them then.
Makes sense. I put a couple notes here for that game. 404 rushing yards.
Mm-hmm.
Is the most Chip Kelly's ever had at UCLA. That's a lot of rushing.
Yeah, all those kinds of stats, I mean, I'm just...
Does it matter?
Yeah, it's an FCS, man.
Do you know 32 different Bruins made a tackle in this game?
101 different Bruins played.
That's crazy. And a third of them made a tackle.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. All right, yeah, so not much we learn about there. No line. Nothing to bet for us.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 different Bruins got carries in this game.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got our number 4 team dropping all the way from number 1. Blame David Woods for this.
Oregon State Beavers.
Yeah, because this is one where
we
have some contextual items now.
Okay.
Because San Diego State we've seen against the against UCLA earlier this year.
Plus, so, they didn't cover, so screw them.
Yeah,
we both
also
picked them to cover.
We also saw San Jose State lose by like a million to, what was it, Tulsa? some crap like that.
Yeah.
So a little less impressive there, but Oregon State won 26-9. The defense is legit. It's very good. They still allowed a little bit more than they probably should have against San Diego State. We all saw Jaylen Maiden looking like a safety playing quarterback against UCLA, and he looked a little bit more like a quarterback in this one, which I think is a product of Oregon State not necessarily doing enough to confuse him. My big concern from this one is now having seen DJU against a real-ish defense, he's the same guy he was at Clemson. Same guy. As soon as there was a pass rush, he got happy feet. He threw the ball too quickly. Didn't let plays develop. Locked on to receivers. Threw two picks. Looked bad. He looked bad in this game. Looked much more confused against that 3-3-5 than true freshman Dante Moore looked the previous week for UCLA. Not good. And that would be my big alarms ringing if I'm a Beavers fan, is having watched DJU in that game. I think Oregon State would have been better served just completely leaning on its running game in this one. I don't know if Damian Martinez was a little nicked up. We saw a lot more Deshaun Fenwick than I was expecting. They ran the ball really well, averaged 6 yards a carry, but DJU was super inefficient. He hit a few explosive plays, but man, oh man, I'd be concerned thinking about him going against Pac-12 defenses that are going to be more geared up to stop him.
Yeah, it was. They had some drives going early, and then they ended up kicking field goals. Like, he wasn't, he just wasn't putting it together, you know. They had a couple slow, you know, the start. I mean, they got some first downs, but they just weren't able to, like a good team is like, okay, you cross midfield and you keep rolling in. And then it seemed to like really struggle when things happened.
One of their only touchdowns was that tackle eligible play where they had to do like a fake to the right. And then DJU threw back across his body to his left tackle who ran it in. Well, actually it ended up being a run instead of
threw it backwards.
It was a backwards lateral.
Josh Gray.
Yeah.
So that was their first touchdown.
Yeah.
So that was first half. You thought they'd kind of get rolling a little bit. We both picked them to cover the 24.5. They did not. Did you know, I got a little bad vibes from the very beginning. San Diego State's kicker, who I think they missed a couple field goals early too. Jack Browning is the kicker's name.
Yeah.
It's bad news. I just knew that wasn't good. David Martinez did get his 9th straight 100-yard rushing game. So congrats to him. But yeah, they didn't look great. And if you don't, if we pick you to cover a big spread and you don't, we're going to ding you.
Yeah.
And so I have no problem dropping them to 4.
I'll be honest. That's a big part of why I'm down on them right
now.
Yeah.
We had him number 1, drop it all the way to 4.
This was one of my stone cold locks from last week, and they did not fulfill.
Because you just saw UCLA dismantle.
Yeah, and I figured Oregon State's better. They can do it.
And
but now I'm.
That was on the road.
Yeah.
OSU has them at home, and they don't cover. So, yeah, sorry, Beaver fans. There's no defending not covering a big spread when we pick you. So
yep.
You will be punished, and you were. Go sit in the corner. Number 3,
Oregon Ducks.
Speaking of covering big spreads, Oregon did just that, 55-10 over Hawaii. They covered the spread by 7, so comfortable cover. Yeah, what do you say about this? Hawaii's bad. We've now determined that definitively. Any team that could lose to Stanford at home is terrible. And so this was sort of an expected result. Oregon did what it should do. It's basically an FCS opponent. How much can you take from this? Not much.
Yeah, the fact that this was a... There's actual spread on this one. We both took Oregon, minus 37.5. They covered. That was nice. Do you know how many turnovers Oregon has this season?
How many?
None. Not a single turnover.
That is something that will self-correct.
And they are also on a 3-game losing streak to Hawaii.
Are you kidding me?
No.
When was the last time they played?
I think it was a while.
Okay.
Yeah. But... they hadn't beat Hawaii for a while. So.
Did they only play at them when June Jones was the coach at Hawaii?
I think so. No, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look. But pretty impressive. Put up a lot of numbers. It's going to be a big game this weekend. But, you know, Oregon did what you had to do. You got that. Our number 2 team.
Washington Huskies.
Washington also took care of its FCS this weekend. Beat up on some sort of directional Michigan or...
It was a directional
Michigan State, a team that has played in a playoff. oh, interesting. Yeah, this was 41-0 after 3 quarters. It finished 41-7. Penix really took down Mel Tucker's program in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
He was exceptional in this game. He threw for four touchdowns, 473 yards on 35 attempts. That's just ridiculous on that volume to throw for that many yards is crazy. They actually ran the ball okay in this one. Again, kind of a cast of thousands, but they did a pretty good job. But defensively, I mean, they held Michigan State to 53 yards rushing on 27 carries. Held them to a really inefficient throwing game. It was a beatdown, massive beatdown on the road. They covered their spread by 18 points.
That's
so
a lot.
It was a massive blowout. I think, you know, I was a little skeptical because of, you know, the running back injury, whether they'd be able to generate a running game. But again, if the passing game is that good, you can run a little bit off of it. And do you really need a great running game if your passing game is that good? And their defense appears to be legit. So I don't know. I mean, Washington, I think, looks kind of every bit what people expected in terms of quality, but it's maybe even a little bit more than that so far this year.
Yeah. Really impressive, you know, road win. Yes, there's a lot going on. The rumors now that they're going through the process of firing Mel Tucker. Dave, your rant about not, you know, jerking off on the phone with people that you work with or whatever, like, went over very well. People were loving that one. But they came in and dominated. It was 41-0 start this game. Pretty crazy. Michael Penix, 400 passing yards in every game this season. So he is putting up some big numbers. Obviously got a great receiver core. Roma Dunze, 180 yards is his career high. 713 yards is the most allowed in Michigan State history, Directional School Michigan, as you call them.
Mm-hmm.
They've never given up that many yards before. So pretty impressive what Washington was able to do, easily covering the 16-point spread. So we got this one right. It was good to put this one in the books early on. This was the Peacock game. Did you get Peacock?
I got a free trial to watch that thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Impressive win there. And they're up to our number two team. Our number one team,
USC Trojans,
had a bye week and been a reporter from practice. So nothing.
Yeah, if I'd known that before I created my power rankings on Sunday, they would have been number two.
Oh, just for that?
No, I mean, not because I think they're the second best team, but because that's a great encapsulation of what's running down Lincoln Riley's legs from his overfilled diaper right now. Just pee pee and poo poo dribbling
out.
A
series of tweets. I was like, oh my God, dude. Sweet. All right. Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and preview games and answer questions. Back in a minute, everybody. All right. We're back here on the podcast of Champions. Talking all things Pac-12 football. Again, we hit the break almost the exact same moment. 52 minutes. Pretty good. Love it. All right. We got to preview some games. We got six games. Pac-12 versus Pac-12. Boom. Head-to-head clashes.
It's conference play, baby.
I don't even know if this is a thing. And I got to look at my I'm sure Greg, when he sends these out, I haven't looked at his pregame stats yet. News and notes. This is probably the first weekend ever. Three ranked Pac-12 games, you know, three games between ranked Pac-12 teams are happening on the same weekend.
It's got to be pretty close to the first time ever.
Because, like, it's hard to get six ranked teams.
Yeah.
Let alone they all play each other.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. But we got a lot of good stuff. There's only three windows, so you have two screens for the whole day, and you should be good to go. First up, this one we have number 22.
UCLA Bruins.
They're going to be on the road taking on number 11,
Utah Utes.
This is 12:30 p.m. on Big Fox. UCLA traveling to Salt Lake to take on the Utes, who are currently 4.5-point favorites. This opened somewhere in the 6-7 range for Utah. It's moved towards UCLA over the course of the week, I think, as injury uncertainty continues to play in. But I also think there's just, you know, maybe some of the betting some of the, you know, bigwigs betting on UCLA early with that high, that bigger line. This is a really interesting game for me. I think if Utah was fully healthy, I think it'd be a no doubter for Utah. Cam Rising, Brant Keithy, Junior Tafuna. I mean, all these guys, if they were all, you know, we know they're going to be available and healthy, then it's a different deal. But we don't know that. And all we have to go on is what we've seen so far. And what we've seen out of Utah so far is a really good defense that's playing out of its mind considering the injuries they've had, but an offense that has scuffled at times, really dependent on a running game that, you know, is without Bernard, who's one of the many guys who's injured him for the season. And, you know, they've got a running back. They've got a running quarterback in Nate Johnson who can really make plays with his legs. They've got Jaquindon Jackson at running back who's, you know, a former quarterback who can really push a pile. I just don't know if they have the firepower to keep up with UCLA. I mean, there's so many interesting elements here because UCLA's offense looks very good to start the year and their defense looks pretty good. But it's also a true freshman in Dante Moore going on the road in a real road environment for the first time. He played at San Diego State, started that game, but it's going at Utah now. Rice Eccles, a really impossible place to play. I think there's a stat that Utah's won 26 of 27 at Rice Eccles. But the only one I think being, was it USC 1 year? I think it was. So
like 2020, I think.
Yeah. So it was the weird pandemic year.
Yeah. Too. With fans, they've been undefeated for like a long time.
Since they lost to like ranked Washington at the beginning of the 2018 season.
Okay.
So it's the perfect time for UCLA to catch Utah.
It is
the perfect time to play them on the road. It's also a day game versus a night game, which matters at Rice-Eccles. I'm taking UCLA plus 4.5.
Nice.
I don't know if I'm taking them to win yet, but I'm definitely taking them plus 4.5. It's got just the measure of a close game to me and probably a defensive struggle.
If it was like 3, I was going to take Utah. 4.5, I'm going to go UCLA as well. I'll go with you. It's tough. Utes at home. Maybe everybody comes back and they're all healthy and they just win by 2 touchdowns, UCLA. I mean, beat UCLA by 2 touchdowns. I don't know. But I feel like this could be a field goal kind of game. So getting that many points, if it was 6 or something, certainly would. I've gone back and forth on this one too. It's tough to go against Utah at home, but you know they could win on a last second field goal and win by a point and UCLA still covers. So I'll just take those points.
Yeah,
since it's kind of close, and
I think it's
gonna
be a disgusting defensive battle. I think UCLA's defense is actually for real, especially in the ways that matter for Utah. The front seven's actually good. I think that will help to shut down Utah's running game. And then, is Nate Johnson equipped to take advantage of UCLA's deficiency, which is a cornerback? I don't know.
EVS says, "Yay, Homer Dave has reemerged." no, I think, and Search says, "Yeah, 27-24, but pick the winner." Yeah, I think it could be something close like that. So with the points, 4.5 points, I'll take UCLA. I like the way they're playing, and go with that. And, you know, full knowing that Cam Rising comes back, Brant Keithy comes back, and it's just all hell breaks loose. All right. Also at 12:30, this one at ABC, we got number 19.
Colorado Buffalo.
On the road at number 10.
Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, it's another 12:30 on ABC this time. Colorado traveling to Eugene to take on the Ducks. Oregon's a 21-point favorite. This opened Oregon minus 19, which is where I got it, thankfully. I think I still like Oregon.
Yeah.
I think if you told me Travis Hunter was back, I might think about Colorado, but watching their defensive and offensive lines up close against Colorado State, it's just, if you can't hold up against a G5 like that, and look, we don't know a whole lot about Nebraska and TCU. I mean, I think Nebraska's pretty bad. TCU, they got into a barn burner, but TCU was having no trouble scoring in that game. And they were having no trouble getting after Shedeur Sanders either. It's just, you know, they had there's a lot of kind of miracle offense going on for Colorado in that game. This one, yeah, I think Oregon's going to have full control of this game from, you know, start to finish. I wouldn't be surprised if they put a pasting on him.
Yeah, this is tough because I can see Colorado going up there and keeping. When you doubt them is when they're going to. They didn't perform against Colorado State when everyone was believing in them. But when you doubted them against TCU, they were right there. This is going to be a tougher road environment. And I think the line play, not having Travis Hunter that was doing everything is one thing. But just watching the line play, it just wasn't. I think they're going to have some problems. So I'm going to take the Ducks here, too. I don't feel really good about it, but I will take the Ducks. Laying the 21 at home. I feel like this could be the final, you know, like.
I don't think anything's final about Colorado's season. I think they're going to lose this one, and I think they're going to have a great built-in, not excuse, but explanation for why it happened. Oh, we didn't have Travis Hunter. We didn't have our best playmaker on both sides of the ball. We fought valiantly. I think if they can end up covering, that'd be great for them. But a loss here I don't think ends anything for them. I think they're going to have a lot of energy for that USC game. I wouldn't be surprised if that one ends up being closer than people expect it to be because it's also at Boulder.
Yeah, but this road one, and they got big new kickoff again.
Yes, for USC at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. game.
That one has some very interesting feel to it.
I got to change my flight because I was going to – I'm flying back on Saturday now since the game's at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, so why not?
Yeah, just come back. Okay, this is our Pac-2 or our Tupac or whatever you want to call it. Game of the century, the one game that's going to be played for the next 100 years that we know of. We've got number 14.
Oregon State Beavers.
And they're taking on the road, number 21.
Washington State Cougars.
So this and the UCLA game I have is the best games of the day. And so obviously both of these are going to be blowouts. But Oregon State at 4 p.m. on Big Fox traveling to Pullman to take on Washington State. Washington State's a 3-point dog at home, which feels crazy to me based on what we've seen so far. I don't know. Maybe I'm just shook by DJU last week. And maybe Washington State is not equipped to disrupt him the same way that San Diego State was. But I know Jake Dickert's a defensive guy at heart. I have to imagine he's going to have some complicated looks to throw at DJU, and I was not at all impressed with how he was able to diagnose and carve up that San Diego State defense. So I'm taking Washington State here. You're giving me 3 points. Why not? And I think they're going to win. You know, it's at Pullman. I think they're going to be passionate about it. So, yeah, give me Wazoo.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they both have the same motivation of being like the left behinds, but Washington State's look better. And to be fair, we think of Oregon State struggling on the road. They looked good earlier in the year when they went on the road to San Jose State.
But San Jose State's terrible.
They're pretty terrible. I think Washington State's better, obviously. Getting points at home in this one, it's just tough to lay points with Oregon State on the road. Against a ranked team, against a team that you know is good, that looks like they're moving the ball down the field, that is playing tough defense. Would you be shocked if like Oregon State goes in there and
absolutely not
win by 14? No, but
I think if they keep it on the ground and just have DJU just like throw it in obvious play action situations or in the occasional first down just to like keep the defense honest and then run the ball almost the entire rest of the time. They could win that one, play a ball control game and just try to keep the ball away from Washington State's offense and then, you know, pound it. I'm pretty convinced Jonathan Smith's a football genius, so I think he'll figure it out. But I was just so unimpressed with DJU last week that it's hard for me to pick him in a road environment against a good team.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So next up, we have Sonora ranked teams. We just got some regular games. We got
Arizona Wildcats.
Wow. Up on the farm, taking on
Stanford Cardinal.
The lone Pac-12 network game of the day. This is at 4 p.m. Arizona traveling to Stanford. Stanford is a 12-point home dog. Look, would I be stunned if Stanford somehow wins this game because Jaden Delora throws like 5 interceptions and just looks like a piece of shit?
I would be stunned.
Yeah, maybe a little stunned. But Jaden Delora absolutely could single-handedly keep this game close for Stanford. But that said, Stanford is an ass program. Absolute terrible bad. Whereas Arizona, still kind of the same thing as last year. A really volatile but good offense and then an improving defense. 12 points makes me a little uncomfortable, but I'm still taking Arizona.
I don't feel that uncomfortable with 12. Like, anything under two touchdowns, like, Stanford just lost to Sacramento State, you know? Arizona went on the road to an SEC team and should have won. You know, I feel like Arizona's going to be, you know, outmanning, outgunning the Cardinal easy. Like, I mean, I would probably take this minus 20, you know? Would you go, what would you do minus 20?
Stanford.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, look, Mississippi State's probably terrible. We've learned that now about the Bulldogs. They are not good. So that takes on a different complexion. UTEP isn't good, and they only won by three touchdowns. Northern Arizona wasn't good, and they didn't, like, exactly do what they should do against an FCS.
Stanford's not good.
Stanford's bad, but 20 points is a lot of points.
Yeah.
So I think
we only have to do 12.
I think if it was anything higher than 14, I'd have to actually think about it.
Okay. We're both going the gunslinger. That's what Tony in the chat was saying. JDL is a gunslinger. He is. Oops, I put the wrong one there. That's okay. But that's what they were saying. All right. So we're both going to go with Arizona. Next up, we got the night games, Pac-12 After Dark.
USC Trojans.
All right.
Taking on
Arizona State Sun Devils.
It's because they're borderline not a Power 5 team anymore.
We still have their sound.
Yeah. 7:30 p.m. on Big Fox. Number 5 USC traveling to Tempe to take on Arizona State. Famously lost to Fresno State 29 points last week. Hey, is USC better than Fresno State?
I think so.
Okay, ASU is only a 34.5 point dog at home. I would have this one at about 45. and I might still take USC. Dillingham took over the play calling, so I think they will score a touchdown. I would confidently say ASU will score at least one touchdown in this game. The problem is I think USC is going to score between 7 and 10.
Yeah, this is USC had the bye week, right? We haven't seen them for a little while. They had reporter gate going on. ASU's got all kinds of injuries. I think they're going to get some people back this week. Drew Pine might play.
Drew Pine, who famously threw two interceptions and fumbled the ball twice against Fresno State last week?
He might play.
Okay. Is that a threat?
I don't know. I think he played against USC a couple years ago at Notre Dame and looked okay. Or maybe was it last year?
Well, and I guess all bets are off. This is no longer Bo Baldwin's offense.
Yeah, maybe they score a little instead of a goose egg. Yeah, this is tough. Like, I'm going to take USC. Every game they've had, it's like you have to cover 7 touchdowns or something, you know, 6 touchdowns.
This is only 5. I do not know how we got this number. This is great.
All right. But that's still a lot of touchdowns, like, on the road for a conference game to try to cover. So they're really trying to encourage you to take ASU.
You watched ASU last week.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah. Shut up at home.
Okay.
By Fresno State, which struggled to beat its FCS opponent the previous week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens there in the desert. Crazy things can happen. Our last game of the week, we've got
California Golden Bears.
Going on the road to number 8.
Washington Huskies.
And this is the other 7:30 game on ESPN. Cal traveling to Seattle to take on Washington. This feels like the trappiest of trap lines, because Washington is a 3-touchdown favorite, and it feels, again, like it should be 28, 30,
yeah,
31. So I think there's something here I'm missing for sure. Like, they wouldn't have set the line like this, like, this badly. And so I'm caveat that I'm missing something, but I'm 100% taking Washington here.
Yeah.
There's just – they look like a world-destroying offensive monster at this point. And I think defensively, I mean, what excites you about Cal's offense? They can run the ball okay. Is Jay not going to be back? Also, they can't throw the ball. Sam Jackson hasn't been good. So what are, like, you think they're keeping up with Washington, or you think they're stopping Washington? What are we thinking here, Vegas? I don't understand this at all. I think Washington's going to win by like 42.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
So there's obviously something I'm missing, because this is...
It doesn't seem like a big enough number.
No.
The way that Washington's scoring. I mean, this was at home. They were on the road against Michigan State and just pummeled them. Yeah. I'm going to go with Washington too. I don't like that we're all picked the same. So if you're watching live on YouTube, I'm really on the fence about UCLA, Utah. I have UCLA. Should I take Utah -4.5? And I've been thinking about maybe Colorado even, just taking Colorado +21 on the road. If you like either one of those, you want me to switch. If Dave will allow it, I'll switch one of them.
I'll allow it if you want to switch something in show.
Yeah.
Just don't do the bullshit where you try to switch it on like Saturday morning because you learn about a new injury.
No. So yeah, let me know, chat, if I should switch the UCLA Utah game or Oregon Colorado, or just stay with what I got and we'll kind of go from there. All right. We got questions to get to. Anything else we need to talk about?
No, that's it. It's going to be a fun week. Everyone enjoy it.
Here's a should be an awesome week. Really, it's like 12:30, 4, 7:30. Boom, boom, boom. Get it done. And I'll be at that 7:30 game. So I should hopefully be able to watch some of these other ones early on. All right. We have a voicemail. Play it for you right now.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. After watching a pretty boring weekend last weekend of Pac-12 football and really getting psyched for the great matchups we have this weekend, my football question this week is for Dave. U.S. Senator Mitt Romney has retired or announced he won't be seeking another term. And I've seen some comments on different subreddits and stuff like that and kind of some history areas that they've said he's probably one of the people that they'd say was probably the best person or the best candidate to have never become president. I'm sure that you disagree with that sentiment. And so I was wondering, is there a party ticket or any candidate that for you has come to mind over, a period of U.S. history that, you would have liked to have seen been U.S. president or wish was? Thanks, guys.
Okay. So great question. Mitt Romney is from the classic line of conservatives. I mean, prior to this latest shift of the discourse, but like the classic line of conservatives who are just kind of like corporate party, like, you know, relatively, I won't say middle of the road because the discourse in our Overton window is so far shifted to the right, but pretty middle of the road, pretty milquetoast. I mean, he was famously the Massachusetts governor who installed something akin to Obamacare, which would be proof to everyone that Obamacare is a right-wing solution to healthcare. But whatever. I mean, if he'd been president, it would have been, kind of not quite six of one, half a dozen of the other when he was running in, what was it, 2008? Did he run in 2008 and 2012? Yeah, it was 2012 too. If he'd beaten Obama, it wouldn't have been.
McCain?
Yeah.
McCain was 2008?
Some social things would have gone differently, yeah. But the general thrust of American politics, I think, would have been largely the same. My answer here is Eugene V. Debs, maybe. Famous socialist American who was ran for president from prison, famously, and I think got like an absurd percentage of the vote, like
really?
9 or 10%. It was 6% in 1912.
Wow, from prison.
Yeah, and he ran for, I think it was like 5 straight years. He was sort of the Ralph Nader of the time, except with a lot more popular support. So that would have been cool, but that would have required a shift in everything. I mean, the obvious answer for me is very recently Bernie Sanders, who, but for an 11th hour coalescence of the mainstream of the Democratic Party, was the front runner. If the field had remained divided, he would have won the Democratic primary race, and then I think would have defeated Trump for the presidency in 2020. So that's the one that's like, damn, wish that had happened. But historically, Eugene V. Debs, if literally the populace of the United States had been different and he had won, I think there'd be a lot different right now.
OC Bodybuilder says McCain was 08, Romney was 12.
Yeah.
I thought I remembered that one. Okay, we got some emails. We got a lot of emails. This one's from Corbin. Question for Ryan. I was listening to the latest episode when you said something that shattered my mind. I had to pull my car over to type this email out. It could not wait until I got to Red Robin. Dave was rightfully criticizing you for spending your own money on 24/7 sports shirts. And then you told the whole world that you buy them for your staff. Listen, I'm not upset with you for buying shirts for your staff. I actually respect that about you a lot. In a world where my employer openly lied to my face about when I would be eligible for 401k contributions, you are out there making sure your hardworking staff looks professional. Kudos to you. But why are you buying another brand? I understand that they are your overlords and the 24/7 Sports Network really is incredible. But you have your own brand that you created and probably bled for. As the kids say, I think it's time to put the P on a fleek.
On fleek.
On fleek.
Come on.
Okay. I don't know. What's on fleek mean?
What kind of, like, I don't know.
You don't even know what it is. Okay.
It looks great. Like it's on display.
Gotcha. Anyways, enjoy the bye week and the aftermath of whatever week's three slate of games ends up being. Thank you both for this podcast. If Spotify had a rating system and review system, I'd absolutely fill out a 5-star review. Corbin. So the one issue with me, if I put like uscfootball.com on close, I could make it for my staff. It does look kind of homery though, as far as just like, it's like USC colors and all that kind of stuff. I have some stuff, but I don't wear a lot. But I can't sell any uscfootball.com gear because USC has trademark. I've tried to make gear before. It would only be giveaway kind of gear.
Yeah.
So it's like just a parent company stuff.
Well, it's one thing to have it for SEO purposes because that's you squatted on that immediately, and that was a very good business move for
you.
But then there's the other part where you can't look like you're literally cheerleading.
Right.
And so it's, you know, that's a tough thing. Most of the 247 sites have something like, you know, ours is Bruin Report Online, but a lot of them are like Beaver Blitz or Duck Territory. So it's the mascot name and then some other bullshit that's not related to the actual team. His is literally uscfootball.com. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Hard to add that to a t-shirt.
I've met with lawyers about that.
Yes. It's a tough situation. But that's why you've branded the peristyle more, because that works a little bit better, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's – I think I could sell – something like that.
Yeah,
like, I have the peristyle.com.
Yeah, you could probably sell the peristyle. Yeah. All right, text message. This is one I posted on Twitter, but we'll talk about it here. Dear Ryan and David, I don't know if anyone wants to comment about your last masturbation show, but I found it hard to listen to. I felt like I was back in middle school with that obnoxious kid that used that trigger word or gimmick to highlight their immaturity. David, you went on and on like no one is aware that masturbation is a 24/7 urge of the male species. Go ahead and criticize that I'm probably over 50, but this show was a little much. I get you need a sidebar topic to make the show entertaining, but make better choices. No worries. I will continue to listen to your great sports content. Few notes. First, we don't plan anything on this show except for literally writing in the power rankings every week. So planned sidebars? No, it's just kind of off the cuff. Did I know I was going to talk about Mel Tucker masturbating? Yes. It's a sports topic of the day. It's important. Two, I wouldn't criticize you for being over 50. My partner is geriatric himself.
52.
Yep. So I understand that. I understand the sensibilities. That's not at issue here. What I will say, and this is the one note I have here, because first, like, if you didn't want to hear a bunch of masturbatory talk, I get it. That's fine. David, you went on and on like no one is aware that masturbation is a 24/7 urge of the male species. What's going on with this guy?
I don't know.
Because I don't want to masturbate right now.
Yeah.
Do you want to masturbate
no.
right now?
No.
We don't want to masturbate right now. Do you out there? If you're a man, do you?
Or a woman. Men, kid, women.
Kid. Well, he's saying the male species.
Oh, okay.
First, male species. What's going on there?
We're not
but,
a species.
But not a 24/7 urge. If it is, I advise you to...
different 24/7.
To seek medical care. Because that's not normal. Not normal. What Mel Tucker did is not normal. The point I was making in my facetious way is that shouldn't be advice that you... I'm going to explain the joke. It shouldn't be advice you need if you're a person. You shouldn't
right.
need the advice to not masturbate on a phone call, let alone a phone call with a sexual assault victim. That's not advice that you should need from a podcast or anyone else. So belaboring the point was the joke.
Some of those I always make jokes about the warning labels of things or just like, don't plug this toaster in and take it into the bathtub with you. And I'm like, well, if that saves somebody's life, is it really a life worth saving? Like, did we need that person in the population that they needed to know not to plug in the toaster and bring it to the bathtub with them? You know, like, are we really helping the world? Or are we just like, because he's going to die somewhere else. So he's gonna, like,
it's sort of the Darwin Awards thing.
Yeah, that warning label saved you. Something else is going to get you.
Yeah.
Right? Is that too cruel?
The world's out to get you, man.
That's pretty mean, probably, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, this was me. Frank says, it's true. Stanford is butt. And he sent a picture of a sparse crowd watching the end of the game. Lost to Sacramento State. He says, Frank in Sacramento. So all he right. was very happy about that.
Very true. All right. I think the next one is spam. So we'll go on to Cliff. Thank you, Stanford. Ryan and David, I would like you to pass on my thanks to the Stanford Tree for making more time available to me in my weekly schedule. With their loss to Sacramento State, they have relieved me of the responsibility of taking between 2 and 4 minutes each week to decide which team will receive my entry in the Podcast of Champions Survivor Pool. Cliff.
Does it take 2 to 4 minutes? Really?
It took me like a minute and a half the other day.
Yeah.
For this one, it took me 10 seconds.
Yeah, this was pretty easy. All right. Bobby, ASU rebuild misery. Hey, guys. It's so hard to go to these ASU games this season. It's not like we were destined to be good, but the injuries are nearly comical at this point. Oh, 6 of the top 8 offensive line, the top 3 quarterbacks, the 5th string is having a decal slapped on his helmet. I can't emphasize enough how much Herm Edwards, Ray Anderson, and Michael Crow have destroyed ASU football. Someone should put together a case study on the Dunning-Kruger effect of those three. Thanks.
So
from Bobby.
Do you know the Dunning-Kruger effect?
I do not.
This idea of perceived competence. It's inversely proportional to your actual competence. So if you perceive yourself to be extremely, extremely competent, it's inversely proportional to your actual competence at the thing that you're doing.
Gotcha.
It's this idea that people who are good at a thing are generally more aware of their own deficiencies at that thing. Whereas, like, nobody who writes for a living will ever say, I'm a good writer. They will say, I am garbage. I am trash. Everything I write is horrible. I hate myself. I would like it if nobody read anything I ever write. Right? That is the mark of a true writer, a good writer. Somebody who thinks they're a good writer is almost invariably not. Until you get to a certain level of mastery where you kind of know. But the idea is that, you know, people rise to their level of incompetence, not...
Is that Peter Principle?
Sort of the same thing as the Peter Principle, where you arise to a level where... But it's also this idea of being ignorant. A big component is ignorance of your deficiencies.
Okay.
Because that's what causes the confidence.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
There was a little thing, too. I think it might have been Cartman tweeting something about... There's some kind of push to, like, fire Ray Anderson. I think he has 2 years left on his deal. And then John Wilner like tweeted something out like a joke, like, you know, the coming news will be like basically it's pressure to get rid of Ray Anderson. And Wilner's like, this definitely means that there's going to be like a 5-year extension for Ray Anderson. And then people were looking at that like, wait, he got extended for 5 years? They're like, no, that's a joke. But you could see that happening because he should be fired. And instead, they'll probably extend him.
Yeah. All right. Is the next one me?
I think so, yeah.
All right. Question for David Woods regarding rushing the field. I tweeted, I think it was on Sunday, storming the court field is cool and fun, and everyone should do it after every win. Thank you for your time and attention on this matter. He said, should Morehead State rush the field after beating the 64 rival in 1971? I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. Yes.
Did something bad happen?
I don't know.
Well, if it did, like if a bunch of people died, then no.
Yeah. This is from Dave. I don't know. But my general point is that it's fun to do it. I think people like to police this crap on social media, but they've been doing it before social media. This has always been a thing that people like to police, like this pride thing in their, you know, their discerning sensibilities regarding when not you're supposed to rush the field. You're supposed to do it when it's fun. Is it fun after like a 35-point blowout? No. So you don't people do it. Is it fun after a emotional win where you win on like a last second play? Yeah, it's fun. So you do it. I don't think it needs to be more complicated than that. It's what would a drunk student do? Follow that guideline. A drunk student thinks it's fun to do it after a field goal wins against a shitty FCS. Great. You're rushing the field. Drunk student doesn't think it's fun when you beat a ranked team by 21 points and you were unranked. Okay, then you don't do it then. But you just... You pick your moments. It's the emotional high of being a drunk student. They're the ones who are rushing the field. We don't need to judge them. None of us are drunk students anymore.
Yeah. By the way, I looked through the chat. Didn't look like people wanted me to switch my picks. So I'm just going to – no differences for Dave and I this week. Doug says he has an idea for the podcast. This might have been the guy that gave us the review, if I'm not mistaken. Says, hey, guys, thanks for the podcast. Big SC fan and a USCfootball.com member for more than 15 years. Thank you for that. So keep the name Podcast of Champions, but only cover Big Ten teams. that have won a national championship since 1980. That would be SC, Washington, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. You could say all time and pick up UCLA. You could even pick up the zeros because they claim one of Georgia's championships through Lane Danning. While snarkily described, something like this could actually be fun. On week one of 2024, I don't want an 18-game recap of games with the games like Illinois versus West Central Eastern Michigan. I'd rather focus on the cream of the league. So a podcast of Big Ten champions. Cheers from Doug.
Certainly something to think about. We've really got to put our heads together at some point here soon to figure out what this is going to look like. Because I agree.
I didn't think about that.
Does anyone give a shit about Illinois versus Penn State? Or not even Illinois versus Penn State. Illinois versus Iowa?
But there's going to be a whole bunch of like MAC teams playing Big Ten teams. Like, so
yeah, like early on.
Purdue, Ball State or something. Are we going to cover that? Like, I'm not covering that. Like, I'm drawing a line there. No.
Yeah, I don't know that we can do that.
I didn't think about the out-of-conference. That's a non-starter for me.
We need to figure some things out.
Yeah, like, it's one thing if Oregon's playing Eastern Washington. Like, okay. But I'm not doing Toledo in Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, this is from My63 Chevy. Oregon State and Wazoo getting the short end again. Has College Game Day missed a big opportunity to head to Pullman for undefeated Washington State versus undefeated Oregon State in a battle of two ranked teams the big boys in the power structure left behind? I know I'm biased, but that's a way better storyline than heading to Notre Dame, Ohio State for the 50th time. In a related question, how is CU ranked ahead of Washington State? No human who watched both those teams play versus a common opponent, Colorado State, would come away thinking CU is a better team. CU may very well have been blown out had the entire CSU team not had some kind of side bet on earning as many flags and penalty yards as possible. Is this just the, quote, prime bump? So that's a really good question. One, yes, I think it is a missed opportunity. I think the, like, environment up at Washington State would be amazing, but I also think it's potentially a bad PR hit for ESPN.
I mean, this is like the opportunity, the two teams left over, you know, like craziness.
Well,
like,
what would the signage be about ESPN if they went to that?
Yeah.
Like, ESPN is what's doing this in a large part. So, you know, that's where I think the actual corporate stuff might play a role. Now, I think it'd be way cooler. Notre Dame, Ohio State's a matchup of top 10 teams, so I get it. But the environment at Pullman would be incredible.
Yeah.
Two, I think you're totally right on Colorado and Washington State. That's why we have them ranked below Washington State. One of these teams has looked more impressive than the other, and it's Washington State.
Yeah, it's not just a prime bump. There's teams that the media are, you know, you've covered for a long time. If it was Nebraska when they were, like, really good, they're going to get the benefit of the doubt. You know, right now, if you're Georgia, you're getting the benefit of the doubt, even though they haven't played anybody. Or, you know, Alabama for years. You're giving Colorado the benefit of the doubt just because of Prime, and you know him, and he's delivered in his first few games. And so they're going to get that. There's a lot of excitement around the program. Washington State's more blue collar. Like, it's kind of switched a little bit here. So, yeah, I think there's a bump, but it's not just – I think it's on the Washington State side too, like kind of a prove-it thing. And it's tough because you're going to have all these Pac-12 teams play each other. So are you going to go from 8 ranked teams to 5 next week because those 3 teams lose? I don't know. Hopefully not. But you're not seeing, like, the benefit of the doubt. But getting those early out-of-conference wins, you know, beating Wisconsin at home, that gets you there. You know, beat Oregon State, and I think Washington State will move up. Colorado loses, they're probably, you know, dropping. But maybe they stay. Maybe they stay in the top 25 if they lose on the road to Oregon. We'll see.
Yeah.
Okay. Is this mine now?
Yep.
This is a question request for the bearded one. Good day, gentlemen. This is Matt in San Diego, by the way. With how competitive the Pac-12 appears to be this season, it seemed like a wise idea for both content and relevance to compare the league to other events of historical significance. Dave, with your extensive knowledge of everything in the universe, can you do a brief 10 to 15 minute synopsis relating the Roman Empire to the 2023 Pac-12 season as it stands today? Thanks in advance. Sincerely, Matt from San Diego.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right, real quick, there's like a TikTok thing going around.
About the Roman Empire, yeah.
Basically, you ask a dude, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And apparently, a lot of men think about the Roman Empire, like, a lot.
Mm.
What would your answer be?
I don't know, once a week?
Yeah, I would, once a year, maybe. I don't think about the Roman Empire. I don't know what that means.
So here's the thing is I don't think there's a perfect analogy within the traditional Roman Empire. I think you have to go to the Byzantine era. Because this seems very much like the restoration of Constantinople, recovering Constantinople from the Crusader Latin Empire in the 1200s by Michael Palaiologos, I believe is how you pronounce the name.
Sure.
He was the emperor who finally retook Constantinople from the – because the Crusaders came in and they sacked Constantinople. The Crusaders in this instance being – USC, UCLA, Fox, and ESPN, right? And they took Constantinople. But then...
Changed it to Istanbul.
Yeah. No. Not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
That actually didn't happen until the early 1900s.
Okay.
During a particular religious phase for the Ottoman Empire. Before that, they continued Constantinople. But this was a period where there was this restoration for a brief time where... Not only did they have the city of the world's desire, Constantinople, under Michael Palaiologos, but they also had most of Anatolia, most of Greece again. It was essentially the traditional Byzantine Empire for a brief period of time. So it was sort of a brief resurgence. It was like the, you know, the if you've ever been around somebody who's dying, the period where they've got that like sudden glow at the end. It was like that for an empire.
You get the heartbeat going a little bit more.
Yeah, they have this brief burst of energy.
Okay.
Where it's there. They're conscious. They're in a state of awareness. It was like that for an empire. So I think that's what we're experiencing right now with the Pac-12. It's essentially like that brief period where they'd recovered Constantinople before the Turks eventually sacked the city.
Scott says, not being familiar with TikTok in the slightest, I'm going to guess Roman Empire is a euphemism for sex. No, I think it's actually people talk about the Roman Empire, but maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't do much of the TikTok thing.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. This is from Dave. Washington recruiting concerns and Heisman rambling. Washington's punting game has seen minimal action this year with just one punt outside of garbage time. Today, OC Ryan Grubb confirmed his offensive philosophy revolves around scoring on every drive. In stark contrast to teams like Cal, Utah, Oregon, and future Big Ten opponents who prioritize field position battles and time of possession. What impact might this have on Washington's ability to recruit top-tier punters? Could the role of punter go the way of the fullback if more teams adopt Grubb's strategy of relentless scoring? I love it. You know, UCLA's punter against NC Central, because UCLA ran it on 1/4 and 11 late, I think he only punted once in that game. It's got to be frustrating.
Yeah. Right? No, Tom Malone was USC's punter like in the Reggie Matt days and was averaging like 50-something yards a punt, but he didn't qualify because he never punted enough for like the top punter in the nation.
Yeah. And then apologies, my second question might tread into the realm of offseason madness, but fear not. I've tied it back to the current season with some hypothetical Penix Heisman implications. Writing this email, I realized the scarcity of QB pooch kicks in recent years. Were the early 2010s a golden era for pooch punting, or is my Washington fan bias showing? I just had an epiphany that Jake Browning might have been a generational talent in the QB pooch punting department. While not a widely tracked stat, I spent 5 minutes Googling and I'm ready to confidently claim Browning as the FBS career record holder for pooch punts, 23. Hang the banner. Note this record is limited to FBS, as Taylor Heineke racked up an impressive 42 punts at FCS Old Dominion. Did the offensive talent around Jake Browning at Washington hinder his potential for a more dominant punting career?
I love it.
Love it. Now, here's the promised hypothetical scenario for you.
There's
if Michael
more.
Penix possesses punting skills on the same level as Jake Browning, would you consider adjusting Washington's offensive philosophy to showcase another aspect of Penix's game, potentially boosting his Heisman draft odds? No one will remember if you score 50 instead of 57 on Cal next year, but they will remember Washington's pick, Heisman punter Michael Penix Jr. With Travis Hunter's injury, Penix currently leads all likely Heisman candidates in tackles, a single tackle to be precise. Leading in tackles and punts alongside the typical QB junk would be a no-brainer Penix Heisman in my book. I love it.
Yeah.
I think they should be punting at least once a game. Pooch punt.
A lot of words, no questions in there.
Love it. It's good.
Yeah. Search says pooch punting is winning.
Indeed.
Remember that? Was that Neuheisel that said punting is winning?
Yes, 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 yes.
Man, he
was
good.
Yes, he was so good. We loved him. He was making a very specific point, but I think it's such a perfect encapsulation of his career. He was speaking to his quarterback, Kevin Kraft, who was horrible, threw picks all the time. And he was making the point, just stop throwing picks. Stop turning the ball over. Punting is better for us because we have an okay defense. Just please stop throwing interceptions. But in retrospect, it's such a perfect description of that entire era.
Punting is winning.
Yes.
This is from Cavett. He sent one email and corrected it.
Just read the second one, I think.
Yeah, Nathaniel from Marietta, Georgia. Hey guys, the Big 12 looks really bad outside of Oklahoma and Texas this year with no top 25 teams and a lot of bad losses. It sucks that the Pac-12 is going away and they are sticking around. As a Utah fan, I'm just worried that the Big 12 doesn't have much of a future. Looking at these teams, to me, it never made sense why they had the hype and the TV deal. Yes, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF had some good years, but those teams do not add up to a league-saving combo. With the corner schools moving over next year, I wonder how much they will regret it when super conferences are formed. Will any team from the new Big 12 be included? What is your forecast for the Big 12 over the next 5 or 6 years? Here's to wishing the Pac would have killed the Big 12 when they had the chance a few years ago. That's Nathaniel. And, you know, I think one of the advantages the Big 12 has, David, I would say on this one, is that they're pretty much immune to conference expansion because they don't have like a desirable brand. There's not like an Oregon or Washington in there right now. But then that could be to the detriment if there does become a super league or whatever. Then no one's really super desirable in that league at all. It's a lot of good teams.
So it's only if the Super League eventually fully breaks off from the rest of college football. Because yeah. I think the thing is, and I've made this point before, $31 million is enough money. You don't need to match money. You just need enough money. And I think for a program like Utah, $31 million is enough money to continue to compete. It's just if the literal level is closed off to you. And we're still, I think, at least a decade away from that.
Yeah.
So as long as the Big 12 still has potential access to the playoff, and especially if it continues to remain a 12-team playoff, which I have no reason to think it won't, I don't think you're in any harm for the next decade. And anybody thinking on a longer time horizon than 5 years is crazy right now, but certainly longer than 10 years. So be happy with it now. You got your lifeline to a new league. And no, it's not one of the ones that will eventually be part of a super league, which seems inevitable at this point. But that's still a ways off.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Yee. Sorry, I didn't see the name there. Stanford, how dare you? Hey, Ryan and Dave. I'm so pissed. Look at the screenshot. I spent about 2 hours preseason to make a detailed chart about the survivor pool, and I'm so ready to win it this year. But there you go. Stanford just ruined it. Look at this. I even prepared 2 picks each week. The first one is to survive as long as possible, and the second one is trying to be correct each week. Anyway, as I said in the Smack Talk, Stanford should shut down the program. Thanks for the entertaining shows every week, though. Yeah, Yee did a lot of work here.
Yeah. So he went with Cal. Then it was UCLA, Washington. So that's kind of early.
Yeah.
But Stanford were his 2 picks for...
So he greenlit. So he did a basically a confidence thing, where he greenlit several games, yellowed several games, and then there were reds for any games that he thought would be major losses. It's a really detailed spreadsheet, and it's very, very sad that...
Stanford had one green light.
Stanford had one green light, and it was Sac State, and yeah, boy howdy.
Yeah, that was bad. Well, that's why you don't do this all pregame. If we did this preseason...
Yeah.
We would have probably had Stanford. Like, when is Stanford going to play? Like,
yeah, no, I think the thesis needed to change on Stanford as soon as they got their asses blasted by USC.
Yeah. All right, I think we got one last question. Ethan from Washington, D.C. Is that Pac-12 territory? Oh, there's no more Pac-12, but I mean, yeah, what's over there? That's a Big Ten country. Mm-hmm. Hey, fellas, quick question for Ryan. In case Dave hasn't already gone into depth about this, can you briefly expound upon how much poop is in Lincoln Riley's diaper over the reporting thing? Are we talking full blowout or just a smear? And do we think he's a Huggies or a Pampers kind of guy? Thanks, Ethan in the nation's capital.
So there's a lot of USC fans who are upset with me on Twitter about this.
Really?
Yeah, that's it's weird. So it's very strange.
That you said that their head coach has won all these games, has poopy diapers, and they're not happy with you.
Well, I'm just trying. And the thing is, I'm just looking for answers, right?
Yes.
I'm a journalist. I am pursuing answers to my questions. And I want to know exactly.
An actual story.
No, but here's the thing. I want to know exactly what Ethan wants to know. I want to know, is this just a situation where it smells a little bit, right? Like, we've all been around a kid that has soiled themselves, right, in their diaper. Mm. And you smell it and you're like, oh, you know, probably need to change that, right? Or is it a situation where this kid, like, has such a full diaper that, like, when they sit, it makes a squelching noise, poop runs out of the leg holes, where, like, when you if you change a diaper before, where it's so full that when you open it, it, like, pops open like an accordion.
Mm.
Like, that sort of fullness of a diaper.
Gotcha.
And that's the thing we got to know. And that's the thing I've asked Lincoln Riley. I've asked USC football. I've asked the AD. I asked USC athletics.
How has that gone?
I haven't received a response.
Really?
It's very strange.
Seems weird. Like, that's bad customer service if they're not going to respond.
It's just I'm a journalist, right? And I have questions. I'm asking them in a public forum, right? I'm asking them of primary sources, and I'm not getting a response.
Yeah. Matthew says, David pointed out, hold on, let me pull it up here. David pointed out that the Emperor Lincoln had no clothes except for his stinky diaper, and the crowd hates him for it. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know what? Our friend who sent the text message isn't going to like that either. Because he's going to think it's sophomoric to talk about
a
40-year-old man's
You've talked
diaper.
About masturbation and stinky adult diapers.
Look, we've all experienced that with changing a diaper, haven't we?
I've changed a diaper, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Not as many as you, probably.
No, I've changed. I think my number is probably, I'm thinking my kids stayed in them for about 3 years each. Probably what? Minimum. I was changing a minimum of 4 a day.
Wow.
So we're probably close to 10,000.
That's a lot of diapers.
I've changed a lot. I'm an expert at diaper changes. Oh, yeah, okay. That's why I'm able to describe in detail, like, the feel of, like, you know, whatever, you got distracted and a little, like, 12 months old toddling around, and they fill up their diaper with a bunch of pee, and then you open it and it's like the accordion spilling out. That's an experience I've had, you know?
Good for you. I'm going to go camping at Catalina.
All right, babies.
Well, you guys, hope you guys enjoy the weekend. Again, sorry, for some reason we couldn't do a recap show earlier in the week. I don't know what happened, whatever. But we're back. And I don't know, are we gonna do recaps, and are we gonna try to do that? Do you want to?
I would
now
like
that we
to.
Have, now that we only have short.
I think we can commit to it semi-regularly. There's okay. going to be times where we're just unable to make it work, because Sunday is the, you know, basically the one day of the week that, like, my kids can get my undivided attention for, like, 4 hours, which is terrible, but we love it. And then Mondays, it's just a matter of fitting it in.
Okay. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up here on the Podcast of Champions. I thought we'd recap all the games, previewing questions. I think we did it.
We crushed it.
In a short amount of time.
Yeah, we nailed this. We owned this week.
Nice. We do appreciate everyone watching on our YouTube channel. Thank you for that. It's been growing every week. So please like and subscribe over there. Wherever you listen to the podcast, if you can like, subscribe, leave us a review. We appreciate that as always. How many people did we have on? Oh, wow. We had up to like 165 people in the
In
our YouTube chat. That's awesome, guys. Thank you so much, guys and gals, for doing that. Thank you for tuning in. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.